It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter, at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also there on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. And hey, if you appreciate what we do here, do me a favor, like us, subscribe to us. Now I sound like a YouTube channel. This is not usually how I start this off. I don't know why I'm such a train wreck today. Anyways, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the podcast, subscribe to it, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate all of that, including the accidental, remember to like and subscribe to us YouTube spiel. Ugh, those are the worst. Anyways, so for today's episode, I thought it would be fun. You know, we're all on lockdown, or at least most people listening to this podcast are probably on lockdown because of COVID-19 and all that good stuff. So with that being said, I figured why not bring back, a week ago? Hang on one second. Okay, yeah, not even a week ago. It was like less than a week ago. I proposed the question on Twitter, who would be the Mount Rushmore of Rockets defenders post-2000? So post-year 2000, who would be on the Mount Rushmore of Rockets defenders? And so I figure, since we're on lockdown as is, why not talk about some of the most lockdown defenders in Rockets history? Or at least, post-2000s history. So with that being said, I want to lay out some ground rules first before we start throwing out these names. So the first things first is, originally when I proposed this question, I listed six players. And some of my thoughts going into the six players that I did list, and again, there's only four spots. It's Mount Rushmore, so there's four heads. So you get four picks, and that's it. My original idea was, I was considering longevity as a factor, which is why there was a pick that was not included, and that would be Ron Artest, or Meta World Peace. I didn't include him in my original six. Because the reason I picked six players is I wanted people to have a chance to argue their picks versus whatever. So I didn't pick my four. I threw out six and I asked, okay, who gets the boot? Who stays? Did I miss anybody? And there were a few people that chimed in with some other names that I didn't include. So I've got a whole list. I think I've got 10 guys right here. Hang on. 10 guys. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right. I've got 10 guys picked out. And so by the end of this podcast, I'm going to have it narrowed down to the four that belong on the post-2000s Rockets defensive Mount Rushmore. Okay? So again, with the original groundwork, the original framework for when I posed this question on Twitter was, I thought longevity should have been a factor. But that doesn't always have to be the case. Sometimes you can come in and have one or two really great seasons and make an impact and become, part of a franchise's history if you have a really strong one or two seasons. And we see that Ron Artest is a factor of that with his 08-09 campaign where the Rockets took the eventual champion Lakers to seven games in the Western Conference semifinals. Chris Paul is another prime example of a player who came in, had really high impact 2-year stint with the Rockets, and is no longer a member of the team. But will Chris Paul go down as a Rockets great of all time? Probably not. But was his 2 years here really influential and really impactful, and did it mean a lot to the fan base? Absolutely. So for the purpose of this question, I have opted to go with a lineup of, hang on, let's see. So first things first, we've got Dikembe Mutombo. So Mutombo has played a vital role over the years with the Houston Rockets. Mainly, and I think everybody remembers this, he was the guy who had to step in and you know, hold down that starting center position for Yao Ming after Yao went down to injury in that 07-08 season and continued on with the 22-game win streak. So Deke is definitely a candidate, and he's not a guy that I included on my original six. And so I want to give a shout out to Andrew, I'm going to mess up your last name if I try and say it on the pod. So I'm not going to say it, because if I try and say it, I'm going to mess it up. So I need to get like a phonetic pronunciation of your last name. But anyway, shout out to Andrew for pointing out that Dikembe Mutombo should have been on that list for me. Thank you, Andrew. Anyways, we'll figure out that last name deal in a little bit. I don't want to take a stab at it. So Deke is on the list. He's on the potential candidate list. Also on that list and part of the 22-game win streak, Shane Battier. So Shane definitely deserves a spot on this list as a potential Mount Rushmore candidate. And I don't think that's not a stretch, you know. And here's the problem, though, is some of these guys. Now, while Dikembe Mutombo definitely had his defensive accolades earlier in his career, he didn't achieve much in the way of accolades with the Rockets. Now, was his time with the Rockets still impactful? Yes. Shane did pick up two all-defensive selections in his time with the Houston Rockets, so there's that. Another guy who was part of the 22-game win streak, further down the list, Chuck Hayes. You know, a wholly unappreciated guy who, you know, you look back and you think, okay, yeah, Deke held down the starting minutes, you know, during the 22-game win streak, but Chuck Hayes was the backup center. You know, and situationally, there were times where Chuck would get minutes over Deke. So, and I'm talking before the Yao Ming injury. So, as far as Chuck goes, you know, he doesn't have any of the defensive accolades, but he was the guy who could go out there and, you know, a lot in the same way that, you know, PJ Tucker or James Harden play this, you know, these undersized positions guarding opposing bigs, and they use their body and their leverage and whatnot. Chuck Hayes did that. He was the original undersized big, you know, standing at 6'6", or, you know, potentially, if he were to be measured in today's NBA, maybe even 6'5", you know, with the new stricter guidelines for measuring NBA players. So Chuck is on the list. Another guy that I didn't include originally, but kind of makes some sense, Yao Ming. You know, Yao was a guy that he completely changed the way that opposing teams played, both offensively and defensively. And so when you have a 7'6" behemoth of a man guarding the paint, you know, that completely changes the complexion of what your offense is going to look like and how easily you're able to get to the basket. And not only that, he routinely made opposing centers look bad. Like, you know, there was the legitimate debate, you know, who was the better center for a few years there, Dwight Howard or Yao Ming. And every time in their head-to-head matchups, Yao made Dwight look silly. So you kind of have to look at it from that angle when, you know, there was a period of time in the NBA where bigs were a lot more dominant than they are these days. You know, it's a guard-dominated league. It's, you know, a lot of perimeter basketball being played, very little post play anymore. So in an era where post play was one of the go-tos, where the pace of the NBA was significantly slower across the board, Yao Ming was a factor. You know, having opposing centers who on a nightly basis were your go-to offensive players, and then they had to suddenly go up against Yao Ming, you kind of have to consider him for the defensive Mount Rushmore. Further down the list, we've got Patrick Beverley. So Pat Bev has to be on the list. Absolutely has to be on the list. There is no question about it. I believe he's the only other Rocket besides Shane who received all defensive selections during his time here in Houston. So that puts him on the list immediately. And even though he's not necessarily a lockdown defender, you know, his defense he's a nuisance. He's a pest. And we see it still with him playing with the Clippers. You know, Clippers have one of the better defenses in the league, and it's in large part, Patrick Beverley is a part of that. You know, we see him constantly, you know, Mr. 94 feet. He is relentless. You know, it doesn't matter whether he's playing against James Harden or a third stringer, he is relentless. And so I think that definitely warrants him a spot on the potential list. Already mentioned Ron Artest or Meta World Peace. And again, he's another guy who had so many defensive accolades before coming to the Houston Rockets. But even on the Rockets, you know, he played a vital role, and you know, he has to be a potential pick. Another guy, Kyle Lowry, kind of falls into the same category to me, at least, as Chuck Hayes, as far as like underappreciated defenders. So, you know, because Kyle wasn't going to be, you know, he wasn't necessarily defensive stopper in his time with the Rockets. But, you know, as far as, you know, taking charges and, you know, kind of doing the dirty stuff, the hustle plays on the floor, you know, he and Chuck Hayes are two of the first guys that I think of when I think of guys who are going to be, you know, the first guy diving on the floor for a loose ball, you know, trying to, you know, basically sacrificing their body defensively for the betterment of the team. And then, you know, another guy who fits into that mold very well, PJ Tucker, you know, a guy who is scrappy, you know, has, you know, to quote Rudy T, right, the heart of a champion. PJ Tucker makes winning basketball plays, and it's honestly a travesty that he doesn't have any all defensive selections yet. And, you know, maybe in a year where we're not campaigning as hard as we usually have to for James Harden to receive an MVP award like we have been, you know, the last handful of seasons, maybe this should be the year that we really push for PJ Tucker to receive an all defensive team nod. He definitely deserves it. He's one of the best defenders in the league, and it's, again, a travesty that he doesn't have one yet. Further down, we got our last two spots on this list. So again, 10 names. We'll cut it down to 4 by the end of the podcast. Trevor Ariza. How could I leave Trevor off? And again, some of these factors, right, some of them are, you know, longevity. Trevor played 5 seasons for the Houston Rockets throughout the 2000s, you know, 4 years during his longer stint, and then he had the 1 year that he was here, or I apologize, it was the 1 year that he was here early on in the 2009-2010 season. So Trevor is a guy that has to be included in there, you know, and he provided, you know, a level of defense that, you know, I think back to just how hard he made Kevin Durant work for the shots that he took back in 2007-2018. And, you know, we're always going to remember the 0-for-27 and Trevor going 0-for-12 in that game 7. But we don't get to that game 7, you know, against the Warriors and against KD instead. We don't get there without Trevor's defense throughout the whole series, without his defense throughout that season, you know, throughout the other 2 playoff rounds before the Warriors series. Trevor's defense for the Rockets, you know, you can maybe say that it was a bit inconsistent at times, but I do think that Trevor was a key cog for what that team was able to achieve. And he was a huge part of the kind of switch everything scheme, right? Being able to have, you know, Trevor, a guy with a lot of size, a lot of length, to be able to switch on to opposing bigs, it's what made the Rockets switch everything scheme work. So he gets a nod. And then the last guy, and this is kind of a sleeper pick, and I don't know how people are going to feel about this one, Clint Capela, right? And I kind of was looking at, you know, I was drafting up my list and, you know, trying to look for some names that I maybe didn't originally include in the tweet, and I got to Clint's name and I was like, he deserves to be at least in the running for it. Right? I mean, so he had 4.5 seasons with the Rockets, and I'm not counting his first season, 2014-2015, where he only played 12 games and, you know, missed his first, what, like 20-something free throws that he attempted, whatever it was unbelievable. I think it was first 15 free throws, whatever. Not counting that season. So he had 4.5 productive seasons with the Rockets, and, you know, he received the starting nod in the 16-17 season. And his numbers just, you know, skyrocketed. You know, he was pulling down double-digit rebounds starting in the 17-18 season. He was averaging, in that 17-18 year, he almost averaged 2 blocks a game. This past season, he was averaging close to 2 blocks a game. Again, 1.8 blocks per game. He was the defensive anchor for this Rockets team for the latter part of the 2010s. So I think he has to be included, at least as a potential option. So, with all of our candidates laid down, so again, Dikembe Mutombo, Shane Battier, Chuck Hayes, Yao Ming, Patrick Beverley, Meta World Peace, Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, and Clint Capela are 10. We will slowly whittle this down and narrow it down to the 4, and I say whittle because we're doing Mount Rushmore. Anyways, so we'll slowly whittle this down and get it down to the 4. And we'll get to that coming up in just a second. But first, a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends over at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker is not your thing, but you still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. They have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, slowly crafting our Mount Rushmore of Rockets post-2000 defenders. So as I'm looking at this collection of names, you know, I think it takes a lot of different variables to pick the four. So, you know, what matters most to you? Do statistics matter most to you? Does individual impact matter most? You know, how good were they as, you know, team defenders? What they achieved in terms of, you know, accolades with their time with the Rockets, or in a lot of these guys' cases, what they didn't achieve in terms of accolades? Because, again, it was just Shane and Patrick Beverley who actually earned any defensive nods during their time spent in Houston. And then I think the biggest part for me is it's less so what they achieved on an individual scale as far as awards go and whatnot, but what the team that they were on was able to achieve. Because again, these guys, their defensive contributions to the Houston Rockets led to, you know, certain things happening, you know, whether that was Dikembe Mutombo in the 22-game win streak, whether that was Trevor Ariza and pushing the Warriors to game 7, whether that's PJ Tucker and the ability to now play Rockets small ball because he is the starting five at 6'5", you know, all of these different things factor in. And I think based on that, I'm kind of looking at these names, and the first name that I need to axe off this list, and it sucks because it's the first. You know what? Actually, I'll axe a different name first. I have to get rid of Meta World Peace. I do. I think that the one season, you know, even though it was a great season, and even though the Rockets pushed the Lakers to Game 7, I consider longevity a bit of a factor, and I don't think he can be on the Rockets' Mount Rushmore of post-2000s defenders, having only played 5% of those 20 available years, right? So, Meta World Peace, Ron Artest, he's out of here. Sorry, Alan, Panda Friend is gone. So, and I think that's fair, again, because longevity is a factor, right? There are plenty of great guys who have made pit stops in certain places, and even though they've been great for one or two seasons, they're not going to go down as all-time greats for that franchise unless you bring home a ring. Like, is Kawhi Leonard a Raptors all-time great now? Absolutely. He brought a ring to the city of Toronto. He brought their first ring to the city of Toronto. Did it in one season. That's all it took. So yes, Kawhi Leonard will go down as an all-time great for Toronto because he brought the city its first championship. Doesn't matter that he left in the offseason. Doesn't matter that he's a Clipper now. Doesn't matter that he's never probably going back to Toronto. He brought them their first chip. So yes, he'll go down as a great. Ron Artest, or Meta World Peace, whatever, yeah, he helped the Rockets push the eventual champion Lakers to 7 games, and he was a big part of that team, and he was a great defender while he was here for that one season, but I don't think that's enough to net him a spot in the top 4 of post-2000 Rockets defenders. So his name is off the list. So I'm closing down my basketball reference page. He's gone. I hope I clicked the mouse loud enough for the mic to pick it up. All right. And by a similar token, and this is the one that I didn't want to do first because I didn't want to ruffle any feathers, I think that Yao has to be off the list. And here's my reasoning behind that. Is even though, and I said it earlier, even though Yao changed the complexion of the game and was definitely a defensive force, I don't think it makes sense for him to be, he wasn't known for his defense, right? Yao was a dominant big man, but when I think Yao Ming, I think about his fluid offense. I think about how great his touch was for a guy that stood at 7'6", about how he was one of the best shooters in the NBA, and in today's NBA, very easily could have extended his range beyond the three-point arc. I think that that aspect of his game, his offensive contributions to the league, and what the Rockets relied on him for as far as, you know, shouldering the weight offensively, I think, he's not Dream, right? When I think Dream, I think defense first, you know, but I also think Dream's an all-time great, right? So, you think Dream, you think Dream Shake, you think the defense, you think the blocks, the steals, you know, you think all that. When I think Yao, I don't immediately think defense. And, you know, I think that's, you know, maybe it's my own bias, but I think that because of that, I think I've got to remove him from the potential candidate. So, sorry, Yao, you're gone. So now we're down to eight. We're down to eight names. Deke, Shane, Chuck, Patrick Beverley, Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, and Clint Capella. And I've got to... So, honestly, the next two that are coming off this list, it's probably going to be... I think it's got to be Kyle Lowry next. You know, again, his... You look at his time with the Rockets and, you know, he was kind of the vocal leader and, again, definitely a guy who, when he was with the Rockets, I loved Lowry, you know, and I still love watching him play on the Raptors, you know, and there was, the Ringers, who was it, Rusilio, who basically said something like he would, what was he saying? He was talking trash about Kyle Lowry on Twitter, saying something like he would rather watch... he was talking trash about Kyle Lowry, saying something like he'd rather watch something terrible or whatever it was that he was quoting rather than watch Kyle Lowry take charges. And I don't follow this same line of thought. Like I get just as hyped for a great drawn charge as I do for a great block. Like I think that defense is defense, however, regardless of how you play it. And for a guy like Lowry, who isn't going to be a guy who's, you know, swatting a basketball, you know, four, five rows deep into the stands, you know, he's a guy who's a competitor who wants to win any way that he can, and he's willing to sacrifice his body to do that. And drawing charges is a great way for him to, you know, do that. And that's what he's done for his entire career. So... it's tough for me to remove Lowry off of it because I did really enjoy his time here in Houston. But again, they didn't really achieve much on those Kyle Lowry teams. That was kind of the purgatory years between the Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady era into the James Harden era. So that was kind of, you know, some of the darker years of Rockets basketball. Those squads were fun. They had some fun players, but they just didn't achieve a whole lot. So I'm going to take Kyle Lowry off the list. And I think, so now we're down to 7 names. All right. So coming up, we'll continue to kind of break down this list. And once we get it down to the final four or the final four or five, you know, we'll dig a little bit deeper and think of some of the iconic moments or things that really warrant those four or five being in the, or on, I should say, the Mount Rushmore of Rockets post-2000 defenders. So we will be right back. You guys don't go anywhere. All right, and we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So we've got it down to 7 names right now, right? Yeah, 7 names. And I think... and I kind of included him as kind of just like a good faith gesture, but I think the next name that comes off the list is going to be Clint's, you know, and I tried to rationalize myself into thinking, okay, Clint deserves a spot on this list because he's been the Rockets defensive anchor. He was the defensive anchor. And even you think of some of his highlight blocks, right? And the one that comes to mind is always going to be the two-handed rejection of Andre Iguodala right at the rim in Game 3 of last year's playoffs. That was, and to this day, is hands down one of the dirtiest blocks I've ever seen in my life. I was at the game as a fan, and I remember seeing that block. And we just watched it recently in our first the first Rockets rewatch party that we hosted in the Locked On Rockets Discord, which, before I forget, there will be another one of those later this evening as we rewatch the Rockets against the Suns in Phoenix, Game 7 from the 1995. There we go. So Game 7, the Kiss of Death game. So that game will be being hosted in the Locked On Rockets Discord Wednesday evening around, I think we're doing 7 p.m. is when we're starting that. So join us for that. It'll be our second rewatch party. It'll be lots of fun. I'll be there. Ben DuBose will be there. Lots of other people will be there. It'll be great. Anyways, back to Capella. That block on Iggy was one of the dirtiest blocks that I've ever seen, right? And Capella's had a number of those really impressive blocks throughout his career. And, you know, he's one of the very few homegrown Houston products, because you look at the rest of this list, nobody else on this list except for Patrick Beverley was homegrown. So you had Patrick Beverley and Clint Capella were your two homegrown Rockets on this list. And I guess, are we counting Chuck Hayes? Yeah. So Chuck Hayes was a homegrown product too, but I don't know why. This is tough. It's tough. It's tough to narrow it down to four, but I've got to take Clint off the list. So Clint is gone, and he's also, you know, he's an Atlanta Hawk now. So even though he hasn't played a game for the Hawks yet, so Houston can still claim him for the time being. So Clint is gone. So now we're down to six. And I'm kind of looking at these next two, and I know that I'm going to ruffle some feathers with a couple of these picks. But again, this is, you know, at this point, this is going to be my Mount Rushmore. And your Mount Rushmore may be different because it may change based on what you value. But I think that, and when I get down to my final four, I'll give my justifications, right? But I'm looking at these next two names, and I'm going to pull Chuck off the list. And that hurts. It does. Look, he's Chuck Hayes. He's the Chuck wagon, right? I think that when you look at what was, you know, his stretch of time with the Rockets, yes, he was there and part of the 22-game win streak, but I don't know. I just feel like even though for everything that he gave to the team, I'm not going to try and disparage Chuck Hayes. Like, I love the guy. I loved what he did for the team, but I'm just not going to put him in the top four. And part of that is because he is an undersized center. And yes, he was willing to, you know, take charges and lay his body on the line and hustle and, you know, expect so much of the team and, you know, those around him. You know, a big part of that one of the big locker room voices during that 22-game win streak. But I do think that one of the things that I value out of some of these guys is, you know, the flexibility that they provide, being able to guard multiple positions, whether it's inside, outside, and just their defensive presence overall, as well as, you know, a couple other factors. But I'm going to pull Chuck off the list next. So that leaves us with five. So we're down to Dikembe Mutombo, Shane Battier, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, and Patrick Beverley. And here's the one, right? This is where I'm at, is I really, really, really want to include Pat on the Mount Rushmore of Rockets defenders. I really do. But I'm going to kick Pat off. And here's my reasoning for it, right? Is I value what the team was able to achieve during the years that these guys played there. And regrettably for Pat, you know, in his time as the starting point guard for the Rockets, their deepest playoff run ended in, you know, tragedy against the San Antonio Spurs. And he wasn't around when they made the trip against the Warriors the first time around in the Western Conference Finals because he had the hand injury. And remember, the Rockets were starting Pablo Prigioni and, you know, Jason Terry. That was their 1-2 punch at the guard spot next to James Harden. And so maybe things would be different if Bev wasn't injured and, you know, was able to have played that series. And hell, maybe that series would have ended differently had they had Pat Bev hounding Steph Curry instead of, you know, a combined age of 34 years at the time between Prigioni and Terry. But I think that, again, looking at what, you know, was looking at what they were able to achieve with Pat at the starting point guard spot during his time, yeah, he was a Houston fan favorite, still is. I still, like, Pat Beverly, I will, you know, he is a ride or die kind of player. Like, playing against him, it sucks having to play against him in a Clippers jersey because I want to root for him. Like, I love Pat Beverly. I really do. But I don't think the Rockets achieved enough while he was here for me to put him on the wall or on the Mount Rushmore. So I'm going to pull him off, which leaves me with my four being Dikembe Mutombo, Shane Battier, PJ Tucker, and Trevor Ariza. And I have, you know, I already spoke kind of about Trevor's defensive accomplishments and kind of what he was able to provide to this team and, you know, some of the ways this team was able to play specifically against the Warriors, right? He was a big part of why this team went seven games against the Warriors and, you know, being able to get them to that point. PJ Tucker as well. PJ Tucker was huge in that series. You know, PJ played about 34 minutes a game during the 17-18 playoffs and he shot the lights out of the ball. And I know this isn't like a shooting isn't a defensive factor, but, you know, still just overall his play in that series was phenomenal throughout the 17-18 playoffs. And even more so now, thinking about what the Rockets are able to accomplish right now, going, you know, fully committing to small ball, they wouldn't be able to do that without PJ Tucker. You know, he is really the heart and soul of the team, and he's one of the only guys in the league that could, you know, hold down the fort at 6'5 as a center. You know, there was that graphic that got thrown around of all the starting centers, either in the league or in the Western Conference specifically. And, you know, you have all these starting centers, 6'10, 6'11, 7 feet tall, 7'3, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, whatever. And then you've got PJ Tucker standing at 6'5. You know, he looks like he's half the height of all the other guys, just significantly smaller on the graphic. It's one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. But he makes it work. You know, PJ Tucker makes small ball work. And I think that that's a unique situation that hasn't really been attempted before, and he has to get the credit for that. So I've got Ariza and PJ Tucker on there largely because of, you know, what the Rockets were able to do in the playoffs with those two guys on the team, as well as what the team is continuing to do now with PJ Tucker at the starting five spot. And then I got to have Shane on there. I think when I think Rockets defense, I think Shane Battier, you know, ultimate glue guy, great locker room presence. You know, if you've ever watched an interview with him or heard him speak, he just seems like such a humble guy. And to me, I think, you know, obviously he was part of the team that pushed the Lakers to seven games. He was also part of the 22-game win streak. He was, you know, really, he was the third best player behind T-Mac and Yao on those Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming teams. You know, he was the third guy on those teams. And I always think back to one of the most iconic moments for the Rockets, at least for me, is the picture of Shane Battier, the image of Shane with the blood streaming down his face from game one of that Rockets-Lakers series that year. And just, you know, him waving down the referees. In fact, I've got like a poster somewhere, and it's from the Rockets 50th anniversary season. And Shane Battier is so prominent on that poster with the blood like running down his face. And I don't think there has not been a, there may be, I don't know if there will ever be a moment that tops that for me as far as just really cool. Obviously, it wasn't planned, right? It's not staged or anything. He took an elbow. I think it was Sasa Vujicic? Yeah, whatever. Going for a rebound and kind of elbowed the crowd. It was either him or Pau. It was one of those two guys with the long black hair flopping around. And, you know, one of those guys went up for the rebound, elbowed Shane right in the face, and Shane just got blood streaming down his face trying to wave down the referee, you know, tell him, stop the play, you know, stop the action, you know, I'm bleeding here. And that plus just, you know, it all, and I got to give him credit too. the 22-game win streak, that win streak doesn't happen if Shane doesn't hold Kobe to 11 of 33 shooting in game 22. You know, Shane, and we saw it in the documentary, Shane gave every last ounce of what he had in that game to stop one of the all-time greatest players in the history of basketball, rest in peace Kobe Bryant, from ending that win streak. Something that Shane knew that Kobe wanted more than anything. In that moment, Kobe wanted to be the guy to end the Rockets' win streak and wasn't able to do it in large part due to Shane Battier's defense on him in that evening. And then Dikembe Mutombo, last guy that I have on the list. I have him there because even though a lot of his defensive achievements and accomplishments, obviously happened earlier in his career, you know, what he gave to the Rockets was a presence that couldn't, again, watching him take over for Yao Ming during the 22-game win streak when Yao eventually went down to injury and, you know, having him be Yao Ming's backup, Deke provided so much that he completely, I said that Yao changed the complexion of the game. Dikembe Mutombo changed the complexion of the game for opposing teams. You know, even at 42 years of age, Deke was in the paint, forcing other players scared to drive in. You know, he completely altered how teams had to play the game of basketball. And I have to give him credit. It's the finger wag. The finger wag is iconic. You know, blocking a shot and then finger wagging at the player, or in latter years, because the NBA started to take offense to that, having to finger wag at the audience, the no, 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 that is hands down one of the best defensive celebrations, or just celebrations period, in NBA history. And again, he was a big part of the 22-game win streak as well. And so I've got to give him that nod. So that is my Rockets Mount Rushmore of post-2000s defenders. It's going to be Dikembe Mutombo, Shane Battier, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza. Also, I'm just going to throw it out there, Robert Covington did not get the nod because he's only played less than, 20 games with the Rockets or something like that. Robert Covington very well could be on this list one day. He has proven that he has been a phenomenal presence with the Rockets so far. But for those that wonder, where's Covington at? He just hasn't played enough. So hopefully he does play enough. And, maybe when the season returns, maybe the Rockets make some noise and they win a championship. And then, everybody on this current team can be on this Mount Rushmore. No, anyways, that's kind of where I'll wrap things up for. So again, my Rockets Mount Rushmore of post-2000s defenders, Dikembe Mutombo, Shane Battier, PJ Tucker, and Trevor Ariza. So argue with me if you want. Jump on Twitter and say that I'm wrong and that my picks were terrible. But anyways, as always, I appreciate you guys listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.